CE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic.
Start your day off on the right foot with great local programming on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE.
Welcome to our morning show today at WRCO, March 14th. And we have City Administrator Ashley Oliphant here, along with Jason Glassbrenner from Richland Center Tourism. And I guess you've got you wear a lot of hats, don't you, Jason?
Yep. Actually, Marty's tourism. I'm the economic developer.
Economic, right. Yeah. I always That's get right. that wrong. And when Marty's here, I introduce him wrong, too. But good to have you in the studio here.
Yeah, it's
today.
Good to be here this morning, Phil. Thanks for having us on.
There have been a lot of things going on in the city since the last time we had you on.
There are a lot of things, and so Ashley and I kind of talked about what we might cover on the radio today, and you know, one of the things that we wanted to talk about was just some of the recent wins that we've been experiencing as a city through economic development and, of course, through the assistance of the administrator's office. So, you know, one of the big ones, and I think the news might have been out a little bit, is the $2.5 million grant that the city was just awarded. That was a congressional allocation that just got funded, I think, in the last week. It was last week, about midweek, it went through the House of Representatives, and then towards the end of the week, it went through the Senate. So Derek Van Orden, our representative, and Senator Tammy Baldwin are the two offices that we worked with. And so this was a $2.5 million grant to extend infrastructure to serve the new hospital location to the east of town here. So we are really excited about that. There's still a very long process that we have to go through before we'll actually be working the project and receiving dollars and moving dirt there. But again, this is to help assist, you know, with building roads, putting in a water, sewer, electric, things of that nature.
So that money, it's just going to be sitting there until you're ready to use it then, in other words? Or how does that work?
Well, it actually, while Congress says it is funded, what they have to do is find the appropriate federal agency to administer the grant now.
Okay.
So that money actually has to find a home, and it could be at the USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, or at United States Department of Economic Development, or the EPA, or, you know, it's going to be some agency that will have oversight of the money. They have to draft their program and figure out what their policy and procedure is going to be before they actually reach out to us and then say, okay, you made it through round one. We know that your project is valid, but here's all the rules you have to follow. And so there's a process yet, and I wouldn't say the money is sitting in an account at the city or anything like that, because it's not, but Congress has approved it. We do expect to receive it, but we believe there could be actually 6 months to a year of time here before we really are seeing actually able to turn in a receipt, let's say, on and receive some of that grant money in for the work that we're doing.
Pretty important that you get some elected officials behind you to help with that project, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I think Ashley made an announcement to the elected officials that, hey, we had worked on this together, her office, my office, and we blasted that out to the decision makers and the council members, and they're like, yeah, this is a tremendous win, and yeah, they are behind us. They have to, they basically have to say, yeah, this is a valid and good project for you guys to be working on, and I think we've proven that it was, and I think they're super happy. That's what they've communicated anyway.
And in addition to that, we've had tremendous support from Representative Van Orden's office as well as Senator Baldwin's office. So having their support, right, we would not have received this award if not for them being so supportive of the project and seeing the value in it. And as far as we know, this is the first time we've ever received a grant like this or from a program like this. And so it's very encouraging, and it's led us to apply yet again. So Jason and I are currently in the process of submitting another grant, the same program, but doing it again for another project.
Sounds like you had help across the party lines, though, too, for some of these, didn't you?
There was absolutely bipartisan support.
Yeah, that's very good. Well, Ashley, let's since we've got you in the studio, let's talk about a little bit your job description and what you do as a city administrator.
Sure. I think it's important to recognize that this role now has been in place for about 2 years, and it was new. And so there's been a lot of navigating through what it should look like and what it should be. When I was hired, it was with two main priorities, which I believe mayoral candidate Karen Tepley mentioned yesterday on your program, but that was budget and personnel. And so although those are two words, those are very big areas, and they can encompass a lot. But, you know, it's been my focus to make sure that we have the right people in the right positions, to make sure that our employees have the tools that they need, and that between employees and elected officials, we understand how to work with one another, and then work across departments. So often, especially historically, government has been siloed or segregated and really isolated. And so everybody is working independent of one another and not recognizing how, just like in the case of the grant, we need to be collaborating. We need to have teamwork. So trying to change the culture a little bit and make sure that we are accessing all of the skills and abilities that we have available to us in our team, in our resources, and using them to work together so that way we can maximize opportunities and potential. And an example of that would be through our budget process. So it's a very, very extensive process. It really starts with department heads, where they're projecting their needs, their services, any changes to services, or how do we maintain the level of services that we have. And so really going through their department level budgets, and then doing a review with me and looking at what our future projects are going to look like, and how do we incorporate that in and make sure we're providing the same or greater level of services, executing the initiatives of our council, and other things that come up that we don't always have a crystal ball to foresee. So it's a very, like I said, a very long process. There's a lot of review. There's a lot of collaboration with that. We have one pool of money that everybody draws from. So we have to be very careful in how we utilize the finite resources. And really the best way to do that is to not compete, but work together and put what's in the best interest of the city first.
That's how we move forward, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Work together. So what's the next step of the grant that we talked about with Jason? What comes next then?
Well, for the grant that we're currently working on, one grant, the second iteration of this, and so we will be submitting the application by the end of next week. But as far as the grant we've been awarded, we're waiting. We're waiting to hear what committee does that end up in, and what sort of rules or requirements do we have to meet for that. And then as soon as we find that out, we'll be moving along.
Is it tough to get through all the legal ease and the do's and the don'ts and what you can and cannot do?
Well, you know, I think, yes, it's a reason why perhaps some places don't pursue grants, because there are a lot of layers. There's a lot of rules. There's a lot of regulations. And sometimes it makes it difficult to utilize grants for the projects or for the initiatives we might have. So there can be cause for some to not pursue grants because of that.
Yeah, I can believe that, because it's time consuming, and you know, sometimes you just don't have enough hours in the day to put all those things together.
Absolutely,
right?
Yes.
Well, Jason, you talked about some wins. That's one of them. Or some other ones you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, another one that we that just occurred at the last council meeting, which was March 5th, I believe was the date of that, is we had two offers on a lot that the city owns at 291 North Jefferson Street. So I've talked about this program again, but I enjoy talking about it because I think it represents an awesome collaboration between the county and the city. So when I first started in economic development, you know, I talked to some of the county board members, the county board chair. At that point, it was Administrator Langreck. And we talked about creating a program where if there was a tax delinquent blighted property that came up for sale that the county took because of back taxes, then could we create a program where the county would assist by basically needing to write off the taxes due, selling it to the city for a dollar. The city invests by demolishing a blighted property and then allows my office to work on marketing and trying to get a new structure built on a lot. So I'm really happy to say that at the last council meeting, we had, again, two offers. They chose to accept an offer on the lot at 291 North Jefferson Street, and the developer there has agreed again to sign a performance guarantee, and what we expect will happen there is we'll have a new duplex on that lot. So housing, infill housing, you know, the removal of some properties that are very blighted and make it really tough on the neighbors' property valuations, you know, so that's a great win, and you know, I would expect that within a year, year and a half, that we'll have another structure there ready to be occupied.
That's awesome. How about occupants? Any idea how many we're talking about then?
Well, that's a duplex, so that would be probably up to two families. You know, duplex means two living units, and so. Yeah, we would expect or hope that it would be a family, although individuals could live there too, or maybe someone that's retired that wants to downsize and doesn't want to do as much maintenance on their own property. They might be a candidate to move in there. So, but it would be two living units.
You have to jump through some hoops too when you're selling that property, as you mentioned, kind of figuring out the land and, you know, I would imagine samples of soil and different things like that too.
In that particular case, it's because it's a residential lot, those requirements aren't as stringent, I guess you would say, but we wanted to make sure in the demolition of the house that the property is in good condition and that there wasn't, let's say, an old fuel oil tank buried or something like that. So we handled all of that in the demolition process of the home and make sure that when the home is raised, that the basement, let's say, all of the rocks and the concrete are removed, the old foundation is removed, and that their soil's put in and compacted so that when a new developer comes in, it's ready to go. So that was part of the city's responsibility, you know, in this deal and this partnership between the county and the city.
Also a talk of a new hotel possibly coming in sometime around the future somewhere?
Yeah, we've been working on that. I think I mentioned that a little bit in the last time that I was on, and the council has taken steps to secure property in the downtown area where we have had a conceptual plan done. That was done through an EPA service, Environmental Protection Agency service, where the city received roughly $100,000 of in-kind work from the EPA and associated consultants. And they did a conceptual plan of the downtown area on a roughly a block and a quarter. And in that block and a quarter, the EPA found through some market research and surveys in the community, things like that, that they believe that a hotel would be a good fit. So we've got concept. We don't have anyone at this point that's like ready to start tomorrow. And there are things that we have to do to complete the transaction with the current landowners. We're trying to do that as expediently as possible, but it does take a little bit of time sometimes when you're working inside of government. So progress, and hopefully we will have a couple of great projects developed there.
And we talked last time about Panorama Estates, too, but it sounds like that's moving forward, too, right?
Panorama continues to move forward. We're still in a process there where we've got to get that final development agreement drafted. And so I know our city attorney is working hard on that, and we hope to have that completed for the next council meeting so that the council could actually, sign off on that development agreement. So what they've done to this point is agree in principle to a financial package to help support the construction of buildings 2 and 3. And now what we're doing is making sure that that conceptual financial package that was agreed to is written in legal terms and can be signed off. So it's city attorney, the developer's attorney, and then the council has the final, let's go, this is good.
Well, we have you both in the studio, too. We kind of wanted to talk about the decision tree and how all that works, Ashley, and, you know, with from concept, ideas and things like that. How does that all come about there, and how do you work together?
Well, this decision tree is something that Jason put together, and it's a really simple way to communicate what the considerations are that our elected people must make. And so anytime there's a request for governmental involvement, we have to tread cautiously. It's taxpayer dollars. It's not our own money. And so Jason has established a really nice decision tree to walk folks through that. And I'll let you, Jason, if you'd like to go through those steps.
Well, we, I like to describe it in four main questions that decision makers have to ponder, and they have to seriously ponder them. So for example, in the wins that we had there, we just don't, say, hey, Panorama Estates is requesting, I think it was roughly 5.4, I think was the number, 5.4 million for development incentive. We don't just say, oh, yeah, let's do that. There's a lot that has to go on, and we want to make sure that as professional staff, we're advising the decision makers. It's not their everyday life, so we want to make sure we're providing good questions and helping them move through a decision-making tree to arrive at a decision that they believe is responsible to all the constituents. So question number one is, do your constituents want the development that is being proposed? And so we can, you can probably imagine, and I'm sure you hear in your day-to-day walk, and we hear it in our day-to-day walk, there's a lot of things that the constituents and the people of Richland Center want, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we want this, we want that. And those are fine. That's great. It's good that the community can express themselves. And that's one level that the decision makers have to consider, right? The second level then is what is being asked for, the development being asked for, is it actually needed? That's a totally different question, right? In community development, we talk about felt needs versus real needs. I feel that I want an ice cream cone, but do I really need the ice cream cone? Like, you can probably look at me and say, no, the guy doesn't,
A want or a need. Yeah, I understand that.
So is the development needed? And so there's a second set of questions that has to be gone through, and we can maybe touch base on those. The third major question is the city able to provide the assistance being requested? Ability to provide. So we look at things then like, what's the current tax rate? Are people saying they're paying too much? Because again, as Ashley has talked about in the budget process, it's the constituents' money that we're using to help create a community here. So is the city able? So we would look at raising taxes. We would look at grants. We would look at on hand.
Cash on hand, or do we have a TID established which could support the development, as is the case with Panorama?
Right. So we look at the different financial tools that would be available to us, and that's a whole nother set of work that the administrator and myself and the clerk, the treasurer, have to work through. So that's able to provide assistance. The fourth question is, should the city provide the assistance? Completely different question again. Whether you're able and what you should do are two different things. Let's use another household example. I might be able in my family to go out and buy a brand new Ram truck, but I'm not sure that my family would necessarily agree that I should do that. So I can hope, though, right?
Right.
So is the city able, or should the city? Two different questions. So I think we could go a little bit further into should the city provide assistance in the set of things that we look at there. And I pass to Ashley. We'll maybe trade off on there's four internal questions there on should the city provide assistance.
Okay.
Yeah, so the first thing would be to consider and determine if there's a public purpose. So does the proposed development serve a broad public purpose? Because we don't want to be pursuing something that only a few or some have access to or could benefit from. We want to make sure that we're looking at this really broadly and holistically and making sure it's a benefit to the entire community. So we have to meet that threshold. We should be considering, can we promote public health, safety, welfare, that sort of thing? Is it, you know, helping with our infrastructure? Does it provide other, you know, educational or social benefits? So that's the very first one that we have to walk through and make sure that whatever it is meets that standard. And then next, we would be looking at the but-for test. So if but for the city's involvement, would this project not happen? So if we've established there's a public benefit, and then we get to the next one and we determine but for city involvement, this would not occur, then we can go into the next section, which would be about undue enrichment. And this is something that, we've used outside financial firms to help us consider projects and determine whether or not a financial incentive or a package that the city provided would create an undue enrichment. Rather than relying on maybe subjective measures, we're trying to be as objective as possible and involving a neutral third party in that process. And then, you know, lastly, are we creating a precedent? Are we creating a situation where we're doing something that we would be comfortable repeating in the future? Is it a good practice, or is it a one-off where we don't want to do this again? So we have to be very cognizant when we're making these decisions about the future impact, not only the present, but the future impact.
I understand. So you don't want to act like you're showing favoritism. Okay, we helped out this business, but we can't help this business, right?
Precisely.
Yeah. It's a real feeling again, and so it's not uncommon that we will hear that concern. You know, I think in the last week in different venues that I've been in, I probably heard that question from three or four different parties in my role. It's like, well, why does it appear that this individual gets this type of treatment and we get this type of treatment? It's a very fair question, you know. So I'm not upset about receiving the question, but it is a question that we need to put before the decision makers and say, hey, look, this whatever we do here, because we're investing constituents' money, in other words, it's every landowner's money that we're using in the city of Richland Center, does it benefit them broadly? Because and fairly, equitably, right? And we do the best that we can to make sure that whether it's ordinance enforcement or whether it's coming up with a development incentive, that we're factoring the same set of questions and we're being as fair as possible. So, you know, back to the public purpose, which was the number one question in that subset of should the city provide assistance, there is actually no direct state statute that says this is the public purpose doctrine. However, that's been kind of established through a series of Wisconsin Supreme Court decisions where they actually have reviewed municipalities' decision making, and they've said, well, how in the world did you get to the place where this one corporation is receiving all of this benefit and we're not? You know, the Supreme Court has said in some cases, well, we don't see it, and we don't think it's necessarily representative of all your constituents. So that's where that one comes from. It's from Wisconsin Supreme Court, cases. So the but-for test that we're talking about, Ashley mentioned consultants, that question is coming through tax incremental financing or tax incremental districts, which is a tool that's established by the state, where the city can capture 100% of new tax revenue to use in development. But we've got to make sure, again, that we don't have a developer coming and going, hey, you know, I could do this all by myself, but it sure would be nice if I made 20% return on this project instead of 15%. So you have to give me this because I can see you need it in the, and you know, somebody says you need it. But again, we've said in one of our preliminary questions, well, is that a felt need or a real need, right? So we do an analysis. We look at what range is reasonable for return on the type of investment. So that's what we did for Panorama. If apartments are here, what range is reasonable? And if we find that the developer is unable to receive a reasonable return, and we can determine that it's for a public purpose. In other words, we know that our constituents have said there's no housing. That's been a perceived need. We know that it's felt, and we know that it's real. And then we've looked at, so that kind of fulfills the public purpose. Then we look at the but for. The developers come, he's shared all of his data. Well, not all, but a substantial amount of his data regarding Panorama Building 2 and 3. Like how much it costs to do this, how much more operating costs, what we expect return, what are rents, all of these things, how much are taxes, how much is insurance? All of that is going into an analysis to say, yeah, well, when you get to the end of the day, you're getting 1% return on your money. Well, who wants to take an $18 million risk for 1% return? That's not good business. So in that case, we can determine, but for the city's participation, for something that will benefit the entire public, we need to, you know, we need to be there because without it, it wouldn't happen. And then the undue enrichment is mixed in there with the but for, but the undue enrichment, again, is what's reasonable return? Is reasonable return in housing, you know, a 10 to, I think they use roughly 10 to 20. So it's a range, but if it's in that range, after you're done incentivizing, that's the goal. Not to say after we're done incentivizing, they make 30%. That's not what anybody makes in apartment housing, you know. So, and then the precedent being set is, again, kind of a mix of all those. So that's a little bit how we move through that and how, as professional staff for the city, we feel responsible to assist the decision makers in coming to a place where what we do is good and excellent. And the other thing, Ashley, reduces risk, right, mm-hmm. and liability. So I know that's something Ashley probably looks more at than I do, is the risk and the liability of things. But again, the Supreme Court has had some of these cases. We don't want to be there. We don't want to be one of those.
I hear you. Those of us out, you know, in the public, you know, it's easy to say, well, you know, get us a grocery store or whatever the case might be. There are a lot of hoops to jump through. It would be rare to have a developer just say, you know, I don't want anything. I'm going to pay the whole freight, right?
Today, that would be rare, and it's not something that we're experiencing. So now more than ever, Jason is being contacted, the city's being contacted by developers that want to come here or want to develop in the city, and it's just not possible. You know, just like with our budget, we're fighting inflation. We're fighting all of these rising costs, and our tax revenue doesn't increase to match it. And so it's very challenging. And so developers are facing the same things. And so there is more demand and need for city involvement than probably ever before. But thankfully, you know, of all of the constraints that we're under, we have been given the tool of using TIDs. And so that really, the tax incremental districts really give us the ability to provide incentives when deemed appropriate and justified at a low risk. And so, as we've mentioned several times, Panorama is a result of having a TID in place. And so we were able to provide an incentive based off of the new tax revenue, tax increment that Panorama itself is generating. So rather than spreading that burden across the entire city on all taxpayers, it's solely what is in that TID that has been newly created. And so that is a powerful, powerful tool that we have available to us that make things possible.
Interesting. Good stuff here. We'll come back and talk a little bit more on our morning show. Time to take a break, but we have Jason Glassbrenner in the studio with us, Economic Development Director for the City of Richland Center, and Ashley Oliphant, City Administrator. We'll have more in just a moment.
Many people aren't aware that Richland County has an organization similar to Big Brothers Big Sisters. For 35 years, Kinship of Richland County has made hundreds of matches between carefully screened adults and local children who need some extra attention. I'm Michelle Nolan-Karras, the director of Kinship. Occasionally, relationships don't work out, but it's amazing how often they do. Having a mentor can improve a child's self-confidence and help them succeed at school and in life. The mentor benefits from these matches, too. Often they last for years and continue into adulthood. If you would like to become a volunteer or refer a child, please contact us at 608-475-2886 or email us at kinshiprc@gmail.com. Donations to Kinship can be mailed to P.O. Box 51, Richland Center, Wisconsin. Your gift is tax deductible and much appreciated.
Buying Mathis Farms Auction Market in Biola is the place to go. With over 95 years of experience, Darren Goldman Jim will provide you with a very competitive market.
It's apple sipping season at A&W, the perfect time to enjoy one of our new apple pie shakes. Each sip feels like fall in a mug. A delicious combination of apples, spices, and vanilla soft serve. Come on in and get to sipping, only at A&W.
Always made fresh root beer, always at A&W. Your A&W restaurant is located on Highway 61 in Boscobel. Stop by and enjoy.
At participating restaurants, prices may vary, tax extra.
WRCO 100.9 FM, Richland Center.
The news at 6:30 is sponsored by Computer Connections Y-Connect Wireless, bringing high-speed internet to rural communities. And by Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy, your full-service pharmacies caring for you and about you, and also by BL Signs. Mostly sunny and mild today, a high of 56, partly cloudy and breezy tonight, and 36 for a low. Right now in Richland Center, our midnight reading was 41, and right now we're down from that at 31 degrees.
BL Signs is a full-service sign design company in Richland Center. They specialize in manufacturing all types of interior and exterior signage for all applications to meet the client's needs. They offer internally lighted extruded aluminum sign cabinets, post and panel signs, non-lighted acrylic letters, LED lighted channel letters of all types and sizes, printed in solid color vinyl lettering, and graphics. Call BL Signs at 647-0149 and see what they can do for you. BL Signs, Richland Center.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I am Phil Nee. Here is what you need to know. There's concern about confirmed cases of the measles not far from the Wisconsin border. As of this week, as many as 10 measles cases have been identified at a Chicago migrant shelter. Health experts in Wisconsin warn of the highly contagious nature of the disease. They add that the best way to prevent infection from the measles is by staying up to date with vaccinations. In the year 2000, the Centers for Disease Control said measles were considered eliminated in the U.S., due in large part to vaccines. However, there has been a decline in overall vaccinations nationwide. As of last week, 17 states have reported confirmed measles cases, but Wisconsin was not one of them at that time. A $200 million hospital construction project is moving forward faster than expected in La Crosse. Mayo Clinic's new hospital will be ready for staff in just a few months and for patients in the fall. The project's manager said the mild winter has moved up the timeline for things like landscaping and parking. Construction on the new hospital began in 2022. The old hospital, which is over 100 years old, will be knocked down and the space will be turned into a clinic, according to Mayo. In La Crosse. Following a disturbing disturbance in which a man confronted an officer and then cut his own neck, city officials in Wausau may use federal ARPA money to fence off the police department parking lot. Alderperson Lisa Rasmussen said it's an issue of safety for officers who may have disagreements with people. She said probably shouldn't know what vehicles officers are driving in their personal lives as well. The fencing could cost up to $210,000. The city's Economic Development Committee and others will consider the request next month. Among the many bills not taken up by the Wisconsin legislature this session, one creating a task force on missing and murdered African-American women and girls. In a press release, bill author Representative Sheila Stubbs said she's appalled that had failed to get a state Senate vote. The Madison Democrat testified at a recent Senate committee hearing where it received unanimous support. The bill was modeled on the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force in the State of Justice, and Stubbs promised to reintroduce the measure in the next session. The Wisconsin Supreme Court issues a ruling with implications for religious organizations.
In a 4-3 decision released Thursday, the court's liberal majority ruled that the Catholic Charities Bureau is not exempt from paying into the state's unemployment insurance system because its operations are not primarily religious. The justices found that Catholic charities meet only one of the requirements to be exempt from the system. The court said Catholic charities hadn't shown how paying unemployment taxes would prevent it from fulfilling a religious function or engaging in any religious activities. An attorney for Superior-based Catholic Charities Bureau said it plans to appeal the ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court. Bob Hague, Wisconsin Radio Network.
Celebrate an early spring with the NASCAR Fans United Grace Team. The team will host its annual Daffodil Days and Spring Craft Fair Saturday at a new location. This year's event will be held in the downstairs at the Ramada White House in Richland Center. Lorna Maxwell is a member of the team.
In the past, we've had it at the Phoenix Center, and we ran out of room, so we needed a bigger site, which is awesome for having more vendors. So this year, we've moved it. They will also have food there from their restaurant, and drinks and green beer, if anybody's interested in green beer.
The craft fair will feature a variety of items to purchase.
We have some awesome vendors. Some are new and some have been here before. It's always nice to have some new ones bring in something different and try to balance it out, you know, so you don't have 50 of this and none of that or whatever. So I think it's a nice list of vendors.
Team member Carol Moon said that fresh-cut daffodils will also be available for purchase.
We're also doing Daffodil Days, which we normally have done uptown at the bakery. But since spring, the first day of spring is close to the spring craft fair, we're going to have our table for the fresh-cut daffodils. And they're $10 for a bunch, and you can pick those up that day from our table. So it's another fundraiser within a fundraiser.
The NASCAR Fans United Walk with Grace Team's annual Daffodil Days and Spring Craft Fair tomorrow from 9 until 3 at the Ramada White House in Richland Center. The Richland Center Intermediate School will host its second annual St. Patrick's Day 5K Run Walk today at the Richland Center Intermediate School. Registration will begin at 4:30 with the walk starting at 5 and the run beginning at 5:20. Cost to participate is free, but donations will be accepted to benefit a scholarship program and Southwest Community Players in memory of Lance Maloney. Everyone is welcome to take part in that event going on today. And screening will be held in the Richland School District next week for 4K and early childhood education programs. If you have a child who will be 3 or 4 by September 1st, or a child entering kindergarten that did not attend 4K, this is for you. Available time slots for screening are Tuesday and Wednesday from 8 until 9:30, 9:30 to 11, and noon to 1:30, and Thursday 8 to 9:30, and 9:30 until 11. Register online through the Richland School District website or call the Richland Center Primary School at 608-649-4483 by 10 o'clock this morning. If you have questions, concerns, or are unable to attend one of the sessions and would like to set up an alternate screening time, call the Richland Center Primary School.
It's internet for everyone from Y Connect Wireless. Y Connect Wireless provides high-speed internet to rural communities throughout Southwest Wisconsin with options for unlimited internet with no contract required, so you can stream all your favorites. Catch the local broadcast with a professionally installed TV antenna. Call 524-5000 1579 today and ask how to save with bundle packages or visit wiwc.net for details. Why Connect Wireless?
It'll be mostly sunny today in mild conditions, a high of 56, north to west winds at 5 to 15. Partly cloudy and breezy tonight, a low of 36. Saturday, partly sunny and rather breezy and a high of 52. Also, Sunday could be a little chilly and blustery, 37 with 12 to 25 mile per hour winds. 41 was the midnight reading that followed yesterday's high of 54 early in the morning and 67 one-hundredths of an inch of much-needed rain. 41, the midnight reading. We are down 10 from that. Right now it is 31 degrees.
Reducing the risk of illness is easy with a visit to Center Pharmacy or Boscobel Pharmacy. Center and Boscobel Pharmacy are your vaccination headquarters for the flu, pneumonia, and shingles. No appointment needed. The helpful staff will have you in and out in no time, often at no charge with qualifying insurance or Medicare. Don't wait. Get protected today at Center Pharmacy on Orange Street or Boscobel Pharmacy in downtown Boscobel. The Shingrix vaccine is in stock, proven to be 90% effective for the prevention of shingles.
Hi, Travis with Wirtz Floor and Home in Spring Green. Want to give your house a new look? Whether it's one room or a whole house, we can help. From the industry's best Carestan carpet to exceptional hardwood floors by Mirage, or even if it's vinyl plank, we have it. Want a new kitchen or bath? We can help with that too. Quality products and quality service from a company you can trust. Wirtz Floor and Home.
WRCO Sports Time is sponsored by Mr. G's Downtown Viroqua and in the Richland Square Shopping Center, your local source for all kinds of great clothes, and the Homesteader Store, Southern Wisconsin's tractor experts. A look back at the boys' state basketball tournament and a hot day for the Badger men on Thursday as well. When the look is casual, the name is Mr. G's. When the emphasis is on active wear, the name is Mr. G's. Because Mr. G's Clothing truly is a special clothing store. Now is the best time to update your casual wear for spring and summer with a selection you'll find at Mr. G's. Choose from all the top names, from casual to active wear, and from dress shoes to work boots. The name is Mr. G's. Mr. G's in the Richland Square, in Richland Center, and Viroqua.
Choose Mr. G's.
Yesterday at the WIAA State Boys Basketball Tournament, St. Thomas More defeated Prescott 68-45 and Lakeside Lutheran 57-55 over Keele in the Division III semifinals. Last night in Division IV, Kenosha St. Joseph was a 46-37 winner over Marathon. And Mineral Point eked one out against Aquinas 62-61. Landon Thousand's three-pointer with 6 seconds remaining. That capped off an 8-0 spurt in 69 seconds, lifting Mineral Point. The Pointers gave their fans some hope on sophomore Drew Ashelman's three-pointer to make it 61-57 with 22 seconds left, followed by a Blue Gold's turnover that led to an Alex Ross layup with 15 seconds left. Mineral Point then got the ball again on a 5-second inbound violation, but was tied up by Aquinas under the hoop. However, the Pointers kept possession, which led to the final heroics by Thousand. They've had some great comebacks through the years, but Mineral Point coach Dan Burrison said, when asked if he had been involved in such a comeback like that one in his 29 years leading the Pointers, he says, "I thought our guys just stayed within themselves and didn't panic." And no, he had not been in one like that. Thousand led the Pointers with 27 points. Ashelman added 17, including 5 of 5 on three-pointers. Eli Lindsay, whose brother Isaac plays for Wisconsin, added 14 and a team-high 8 rebounds. Aquinas, which had won 6 straight games prior to Thursday, got 10 points from Walter Burns. Speaking of the Badgers, freshman John Blackwell poured in 18 points. Stephen Curl added 17. A.J. Storr 16 as Wisconsin cruised to an 87-56 win over Maryland in the second round of the Big Ten tournament. The Badgers shot 51.7% from the field for the game and hit 16 of 25 from three-point range to win. Coach Greg Gard says this team just keeps working.
The key is if you hit a little dip, just keep working your way out of it, because I kept telling them all the time when we were going through this, we're a really good team, and we'll fight our way out of it. And I'm glad to see that they're getting rewarded for their perseverance and their persistence.
John Blackwell says the team has stayed together well.
I just feel like we've turned up our defense a little bit more and pushed more on offense, and we didn't put the blame on each other when we was taking them losses and we stayed together. I feel like that was important with us making this run and us playing better together. So,
the Badgers will face Northwestern in the Big Ten quarterfinals starting at 1:30 this afternoon. Pregame 12:30 on WRCE, FM 107.7 and AM 1450. David Joplin scored 6 points in overtime. Marquette held off upset-minded Villanova 71-65. The win means the Golden Eagles will meet Providence in the Big East Conference Tournament semifinals tonight in Madison Square Garden. Another double-double by Giannis Antetokounmpo led the Bucks to a 114-105 victory at home over the 76ers. The All-NBA performer scored 32 points and took down 11 rebounds as Milwaukee bounced back from a disappointing West Coast swing. It was playing without starting guard Malik Beasley and reserve Marjon Beauchamp. Philadelphia star Joel Embiid is still out nursing a sore knee. The Bucks stay at home waiting for Phoenix coming up for a Sunday game. And the Packers are expected to keep running back A.J. Dillon. The NFL Network is reporting the powerful Dillon will be re-signed to backup new starter Josh Jacobs. Various reports Wednesday had teams like the Cowboys and Giants ready to grab him. NFL Network analyst Ian Rappaport says the team will use a salary cap strategy to save some space while signing Dillon. Packers are working on a one-year deal. I'm Phil Nee with sports.
Ellis Tractors are a great tractor at a great price. Hi, this is Rick from the Homesteader Store. Let an Ellis Tractor do all the jobs that need to get done.
They make tractors. Jason Glassbringer is in with us, and Ashley Oliphant talking about a business in the city of Richland Center and some things that we wanted to kind of touch base on today, including Ashley, city revitalization. Can you give us kind of an update and a rundown on what that is?
So the city revaluation. This has been something that has been needed for some time now. It's been talked about. We certainly included it in the budget. So a revaluation is something that we are required to do it. And the purpose really is to make sure that the assessed value of properties are closer to the fair market value. And that way there's an equitable taxation for everyone. It's not to increase property taxes. It's not to increase the burden that everybody feels, but it's to ensure that we're accurately assessing what exists. And so one of the mechanisms that we have in place, that every municipality has in place, to make sure that we're not getting too far out of alignment or too far off throughout the time in between revaluations is through zoning. So when folks pull a permit, they're able to provide the information necessary for the assessor to capture improvements. So if I were to, say, remodel my kitchen or build a new garage, there's an increase in value to my property. And so the property taxes should reflect that increased value. If I don't pull a permit, then the assessor has no way of knowing what that improvement is. And so then I'm not paying my fair share of property taxes, but somebody else might be paying it instead. And so we want to make sure that we maintain as accurate assessment or assessment values as possible. So a revaluation will go through the entire city and evaluate all properties, what structures are there right now, and capture the value of those structures and land, of course. And so when we do that, it's kind of resetting. We're resetting. The size of our pie doesn't necessarily change, but the size of our individual slices of pie, that does change. So for some folks, after a revaluation, their property taxes might not change. They may even decrease because the mill rate may be adjusted, even though your assessed value could go up because of a mill rate adjustment to get that equalization, your taxes could stay the same or even decrease. If your assessed value is higher than the average assessed value, then you're likely going to see an increase. But again, the point of it is to have equitable taxation, not to just increase taxation.
I see. How often do you assess or reassess? Or, I mean, has it been a while?
It has been a while. Usually you should be doing it between every 5 to 10 years.
Okay. So it's better for all of us then, isn't it?
Absolutely. Kind of, sure. Absolutely. Yep.
So that's coming up. Anything you'd like to add, Jason?
No, I mean, I think that there's a lot of public intrepidation about when you move into a revaluation because they, you know, the public thinks that revaluation means automatic tax increase. And that's, while that will occur for some individuals, it's not because, like, as a whole, taxes increased. Again, Ashley said the pie. What we mean by the pie is the exact amount that the city collects cannot change in a revaluation. But it redistributes who pays it based on what value their property currently has, not what it was 8 years ago when our last revaluation was, because maybe that person, you know, and Ashley mentioned building permits and zoning permits and stuff like that. Maybe I took my $150,000 home and put $100,000 into it. But it didn't necessarily, it should get caught going through a permit process, but maybe it didn't. And so now I've got a home that's valued more than the other homes in my neighborhood, but I'm still paying a tax rate that is at the same or maybe even lower than my neighbor. Well, that's not equal distribution of taxation. So that's an example of why we need to make sure, and we do that with normally through a consulting service, right, Ashley?
Correct. So the city will be publishing a request for proposals, so seeking that professional firm to conduct the revaluation. And I'll add, right, the pie, it's the same size. But when we do have improvements, you know, that's what, when you hear net new construction, so that's, you know, new buildings, that's improving current structures, that's how the pie does increase. And so there is, it's not certain that our pie will stay the exact same. It just depends on how far off we might be right now in capturing improvements that have been made over time. But the only way taxes increase or that we're allowed to levy more taxes is through net new construction. And that's the rule of the state. And that's a huge limiting factor, right? When we talked about combating inflation and the changes that we're experiencing, it's because we can't just assess or levy what we would like. We're limited and controlled by net new construction.
Can you give us an update on Jefferson School and that project?
Yeah, I'd love to. But before we go there, there was one more thing I wanted to say on our decision-making tree that I think was important. And so, again, just to leave the listeners with the four questions again. Do your constituents want the development? Is the development needed? Is the city able to provide assistance? Should the city provide assistance? So under the question of is the development needed? Again, we're not talking about felt need, but we're talking about real need. So what the decision makers have to do in that particular case is ask the question, is there a lack of the type of development that we're talking about? Is there a real lack? Is there a real broad-based public need for this? Not again do I feel or I wish I had another choice. You know, the 10 choices that are here aren't enough. I want the 11th. That would not be appropriate for the decision makers to say, yeah, I know the constituents are, you know, really after us for 11th choice, but when we participate with city and taxpayer dollars by incentivizing the 11th, we're competing with the 10. That's not necessarily in my belief the role of government or my office, economic development. I'm trying to fill in where there's need and there's real need and there's real gap and that our community is struggling or perhaps you could say suffering. I don't like that term. I think we're doing pretty good in Richland Center, but that's the type of, at the core of the decision making process, our decision makers really have to say, is there a lack of that development here? Because if there's not, then our promotion of one versus all of the other is basically the city choosing to compete. And we haven't been instructed. I don't know if Ashley's been instructed, but we haven't been instructed in any way, shape, or form that that's our role. So that I'm aware of. Ashley?
No.
Okay. So the other thing is something needed? Is the development needed? It's important not to just say, well, it increases tax and you know, we don't have that item. There, it's important to look at the what I call, or someone else has referred to, and I picked up, I kind of like the term, but it's called tangential, tangent, off to the side, tangential economic benefits. So when we're moving through a decision-making process with the team, we're saying not just do we want it or is it needed, but what jobs are created? What level jobs are created? What types of jobs are created? Is there insurance with the jobs? Is there retirement funding with the jobs? Are the jobs family friendly, or are they, you know, is there a particular demographic that the job is most likely to attract? Does the development being proposed bring a national name brand name to our community, which could help draw customers from around the area into Richland Center to make our business environment healthier? Do we have a positive growth image? So, you know, I think in the past, probably all of us have said, darn, I wish more would happen in Richland Center. Well, as we do these things, the decision makers, you know, get pro-business or pro-development, we're actually benefiting from a positive growth image. Something good is happening in Richland Center, something positive. We have to look at destination shopping, for example. So if we incentivize or we promote this business, what other destination shopping events take place? So they don't just go to place X, but they go to A, B, C, D, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's destination type of shopping type of questions.
We're fortunate to have both of you in the studio today. Thanks for your expertise and your insight here today.
Thanks for having us, Phil.
Good to have you. We'll talk to you again real soon. Jason Glassbrenner, Economic Development Director, City of Richland Center. Also joining us today, City Administrator Ashley Oliphant on The Morning Show.
Tom Mueller is our guest from Mueller Implement in Dodgeville. Hey, a little rain this week. Maybe you're going to be closer to mowing than we thought originally here, Tom.
I think so, Mike. And, of course, hopefully warmer weather comes and we'll get things going. The grass is actually greened up, and any time that we're in that 40-degree weather, grass does grow. So you're going to see a sudden change in your lawn, and, of course, that's important to be ready for it. Right now, we're just ending our programs with Gravely, and we have a program we're announcing on our Aaron's side. Aaron's, of course, is the orange side of our business. And they basically don't have any programs this year, but we decided to create one. So all errands, that be all the orange items that we have here, have a 5% off for cash or check discount. It's really a great product line. It runs less money than the Gravely. It's a little de-spec compared to the Gravely line, but it's very affordable, so it's a great time to stop in and see us. So 5% off, that ends the 1st of May. It will also end when we run out of these units. So if you're looking to save some money, come on and see the Aaron's line and take advantage of it.
Is it like the Alice Chalmers line? It's orange,
it is,
right?
It is the Alice Chalmers line, yes. Okay, yes, good. And the Gravely line's kind of like the Farmall. And so the premium versus the economic line, that's the best way of putting
there
it.
There you go.
You bet. But here's the other thing. We are ending a program Saturday, so you have time to get here. Saturday is the end of our Husqvarna 20% off on commercial items. That would be saws, pole saws, blowers, weed eaters, etc. And 10% off on all of our consumer saws, pole saws, and etc. That ends Saturday, so officially it's a big savings. When you start looking at an $800 or $900 saw and take 20% off, that's a lot of money. These are fantastic products, and of course, it's very popular in this area, and it's becoming more and more popular, especially with the loggers and that sort of thing. So that program ends. Like all good things, nothing is forever. Unlike you and I, which we'll both be around for a long time, Phil, these things do end. So, but moving forward, Mueller Ipman is, of course, always ready for spring, and we advise you that if you're thinking about spring, you might want to get your product into Mueller Ipman to be serviced, because spring's going to be here early this year. And that doesn't mean we won't get 5 inches of snow the 15th of April, but we don't know. But key here is to come to Dodgeville, Wisconsin. We're not hard to find. We're here at 4948 Highway YZ, right across from Midwest Roofing. And, of course, those little guys, Farm and Fleet, Phil, they're doing remodeling, so they must be planning on staying in business. So,
really? Okay.
Yeah. So hopefully you stop and see those folks as well. They're nice people. We're open 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, 8 to noon on Saturday. Go to www.MuellerRental.com, and you'll see everything that we have for sale. Go to Craigslist on the left-hand side, punch in Mueller, and you will see all our specials on new, used, and many other items that we sell. So feel free to go there. But you know what? Give us a call at 935-2751 because we're always available by phone. We're doing our best to take care of our customers. Come down and be surprised. Find out what it's all about. We are thoroughly the largest lawn and garden company in pretty much southern Wisconsin. And we're that because we do everything right or try to, and if we make mistakes, we correct them. So that, all I can tell you, Phil, is it's an opportune time to save money. It's always a great time to stop at Mueller.
And better get those blades sharpened too, right?
You betcha. Nothing worse than a dull set of blades.
Right. Yeah, all right. Well, sounds good, Tom. We'll talk to you real soon.
You bet, Phil. And let's all have a great spring.
Sounds good. And happy St. Paddy's Day to you, too.
Well, thank you.
I don't imagine you're too much Irish, though, are you?
Well, I'm Irish enough to drink green beer.
Well, good luck with that. That's Tom Mueller in Dodgeville at Mueller Implement.
You are listening to WRCE 1450 AM, W299 CD, Richland Center.
Prescription Center.